This is the largest Philadelphia Society meeting ever, and I think this is the largest Sunday morning breakfast session ever held by the Philadelphia Society as well. Maybe it's the topic, I don't know, but we'll find out. 40 years ago, when this society was founded, the main challenge of foreign policy seemed to be pretty clear: to control, contain, defang, and eliminate the threat from communism and its principles, the Soviet Union and communist China. This organizing principle had many corollaries and led us into numerous conflicts around the world. Mixed in with the objective of protecting the United States were other motivations, including spreading democracy and the principles of the free society elsewhere in the world, what Walter McDougall calls global meliorism. These tendencies led us into still other conflicts, including Vietnam, if one is to believe both McDougall and Henry Kissinger. In retrospect, though, the main challenge was reasonably well defined, even if the policies that were adopted may not have been coherent and or wise. Now the situation is different. Communism of the messianic Leninist stripe seems to be largely a thing of the past. The world's largest professedly communist state, the People's Republic, appears to be communist more in name than in practice. North Korea is a gangster state, communist only in the sense that the party calls itself that. Communism, or Marxism, appears now to be confined mainly to a few college campuses here and abroad and to some ragtag factions of the anti-globalization forces. This is not to say that we can relax our guard against these forces or that the fight to preserve Western civilization and its values is over. As we've heard very eloquently yesterday, especially yesterday afternoon, far from it. History does not seem to have ended. Now we face different challenges. Terrorism and radical Islam top the list right now, along with all of the related, seemingly intractable problems of Israel, Palestine, and the rest of the Middle East. Longer term and not entirely separate is demographic change. As populations in the West age and perhaps actually shrink, and those in the Muslim world as well as Latin America and Africa grow at rapid speeds. These demographic changes have deep implications for economic change and development throughout the world, for immigration, both legal and illegal, and for cultural impact and change. Western values are now increasingly challenged from within, as well as without the national borders of the traditionally Western states. A third challenge, again not entirely distinct from the other two, is globalization. Many think that the forces of the market are ultimately so powerful that continued globalization is inevitable, and they are probably right. But in the meantime, the extension of trade, the impact on local cultures, the effects on employment, however misunderstood they might be, and so forth, all provide cannon fodder for those who would destroy the capitalist system and substitute what? For many of them, this question, what to substitute, doesn't occur. But they nevertheless do damage to economic development and to the ideals of freedom. This list could be extended easily. It includes the broad but rather fuzzy matter of human rights, maintenance of adequate energy resources, issues connected with the environment, ocean policy, global climate change, air and water pollution, and on and on. The world of foreign policy seems much more complex than it was perhaps 40 years ago. But maybe that's just because things look simpler in retrospect than they do in the heat of the moment. But if terrorism and anti-globalization are important challenges, what kind of foreign policy can be conceived? If foreign policy focuses on relations with other states, how can it meet such a challenge? The terrorists are not a state. They do not have one, even if they do have state sponsors. Furthermore, they have permeated the very societies that they wish to destroy. The war on terror cannot be won by conventional foreign policy alone. There is a common interest among Western nations, of course, and there conventional foreign policy plays a role. Whether it can do so with sponsor states or those that sympathize with but do not actively support terrorism is another question. Terrorism is one example of the challenges that can't be met by conventional foreign policy, but it is not the only example. It is clear that governments can do very little to control population growth unless they are willing to adopt draconian measures. And even then, only limiting growth seems to yield to such measures. Pronatalist efforts have been notably unsuccessful. In any case, barring catastrophic war or major national disaster, the populations of the next 50 years or so are largely determined right now. Governments also seem less potent today in controlling trade and therefore globalization. Market forces are simply too powerful. And technological change, especially as it affects communications, only reduces the power of governments to turn back this tide. Surely, one might say, a good thing. So what role can foreign policy play in such a future? What indeed does foreign policy mean in these circumstances? If there is such a thing as foreign policy for the United States when the issues transcend nation states, what should the policy be? Should we return to what McDougall calls the Old Testament of American foreign policy, defense of liberty at home, unilateralism abroad, the American system of states, and American expansionism? Can we? Or should we continue to move in the directions that he refers to as the New Testament? Progressive imperialism, Wilsonianism, containment, but what do we contain? And global meliorism. Put another way, what is America's role in the world as its only superpower? The question is now a dozen years old, but we seem not to have found any answers. Of course, there is no simple answer to this. Human events do not move in ways that produce simple answers to complex questions. Only the development of American foreign policy over the next 40 years and the responses of other nations will reveal the answer. That's the challenge, at least as I see it, at least part of the challenge as I see it. And this morning we have an excellent panel of experts to discuss the matter of American foreign policy in these interesting days. To judge by the titles of their presentations, which you don't have but I do, they will touch on many of the fundamental questions involved regarding our foreign policy. I will give brief introductions. I've asked them all to try to restrain themselves to 15 minutes of presentation. Then we'll have a brief opportunity for them to respond to each other if they wish, and then we'll open the floor for questions. I hope we'll have close to an hour for Q&A.